So this, when a student becomes a teacher, part of the ceremony is we get one of these. This is a small one. So if I ask you, what is it? I would guess that there would be a variety of answers, right? Well, it's a stick. It's a stick. Or if you look more closely, it's twisted. So maybe it's a branch or a vine. But this is the universe. This is right here. This is the universe. And so this talk is going to be about what prevents us to seeing this as just a stick or just a branch or just a root. It's the universe. Peter Levitt, in a book of poems entitled 100 Butterflies, wrote this poem. Already at birth, I was parted, not just from my mother, but body from mind, mind from its source. And that's why I take up this soft blade of breath to cut me back into one. I don't know if anybody ever thought it this way, but the womb is a place of oneness and intimacy. And when we leave the womb, we enter the world of form, and we begin a lifelong induction into duality. So how does this induction take place? A helpful way to understand this is to look at some of the ways that we develop, both psychologically and biologically. And one of the most rapidly developing parts of a newborn is the brain. And research shows that a newborn starts thinking even before they learn to speak. And babies as young as 5 months old make distinctions and categorize certain types of events. Right? So the mind, very early on, starts developing in a particular way. And the nature of this categorization changes and gets more and more sophisticated as we age. So as a child's learning evolves, he or she is introduced to a variety of names, concepts, identities, hierarchies, good, bad, and on and on. This process begins very early on and continues through elementary school, high school, college, and as we move through life in general, this process never stops. And this process contributes to living in a world that's dualistic. We're trained very early on for purposes of survival and development to separate the world into individual parts. And from that perspective, this is a stick. We name it, we classify it, we put it in a particular category, a stick. But it's also the universe. From a psychological perspective, one of the major developmental tasks of childhood was identified by Erik Erikson. And this task is the separation and individuation phase, as it's called. And this is the process where the child separates from parents and develops into an independent identity. The child separates from the parent. So another production of duality, father, child, mother, child. That doesn't mean it's not necessary, but it's important to see how this unfolds, how we lose sight of the fact that this stick is the universe. So this process where the child separates from the parents and develops, as I said, an independent entity, and this further, right, contributes to the world as dualistic. Thinking also plays a large part in the way we see the world and experience ourselves in relation to that world. And this is a sort of an amazing statistic, but researchers estimate that we have between 3,000 to 5,000 thoughts per day. It's a lot of thinking. And the frequency and content of these thoughts creates what we name reality. Right, and existentialists pointed out, we are what we think. You are what I think you are. I am what you think I am. And it's the mind that creates these distinctions. So let me share a couple of examples of how thinking affects our perception of ourselves and the world around us. So this thinking doesn't just shape how we see, how I see you guys out there, but it also affects the relationship that I have with myself. How I think about myself determines who I am. So the first example, it comes from an article that I read, and it's about how surgeons are trained to be very careful what they say during surgery, even if the patient is under anesthesia. And the reason for this is that research shows that negative suggestions such as, I think this guy is quite a bleeder, or she's going to have a tough recovery, in a very subtle way, subliminally, these negative statements can be absorbed by the person. So surgeons and people work in surgery, and this would spread to any kind of treatment. They have to be very mindful of what they say, because those negative thoughts can have an impact. Now, in stress management program, focuses on a person's self-talk. How do we talk to ourselves during the day? How do we talk about our circumstances? And the attention to one's thought is based on research which shows, as I just mentioned too, is that negative self-talk heightens stress, disrupts appetite, which causes over or under eating, and disturbs sleep. And so again, the conclusion of these researchers confirms what meditation teachers have known for a long time, and that's that our thoughts, again, create reality. So there's tons of research to confirm this over and over and over again, the power of our thinking to affect the lives that we create for ourselves. Now, this is sort of an amalgam of experiences that I've had as a therapy when I've worked with couples. So I often encounter a situation where one person will say to the other person, "You made me feel angry," or "You made me feel worthless." And when I inquire further, I might learn that this happens because the husband, in this case, comes home late from work. And if I ask his wife to recall a specific time that this happened and to notice what she is feeling, often the person might say, "I feel angry. I feel worthless." And then I'll ask, "So what did you say to yourself just before you felt angry or you felt worthless? What thoughts did you have just before you had these feelings?" And almost always the person will say something like, "I thought he really doesn't love me," or "I'm not important to him." So the truth of the matter is that the husband, in this case, didn't make his wife feel angry. He didn't make her feel angry or worthless. It was what she told herself about the situation. And in this case that I'm making up, when I checked this out with the husband, he said, "Well, I stayed at work because I was concerned about losing my job, and I wanted the boss to see me as valuable and cooperative." So what was happening in this particular situation was that his wife was creating a false reality by not checking her thoughts out with her husband. Now, it could also work the other way. He could be doing this because he's making up in his mind. His thoughts are creating the idea that his boss is some way he's in trouble with his boss. And then, of course, in the example that I gave, he doesn't communicate his worries with his wife. So he creates a space because of lack of communication where his partner can make up these thoughts. So that's where communication comes in. We check out each other's thoughts. What is your mind making in this relationship? What is my mind making in this relationship? So these are a couple of examples of how powerful and persuasive thought is and how it affects our perception of reality. And this isn't news, really. You know, so if I'm creating negative thoughts all the time, I'm going to live in a negative world. And this thought-created reality will affect relationships, health, and our sense of being in the world. Very powerful. Now, flipping it around, if we have thoughts that are positive, thoughts that arise out of love and connection, well, that's going to be a very different reality that our thinking creates for us. So, if I pick up this stick again, this stick, it's true, is a stick. But in Zen, we see this stick also as a non-stick, that it's also empty of the particular identity that we place on it. This is a stick because we say it's a stick. And that's what we've been trained to do. But there's a whole other side that we come to Zen to experience. And that is that this is the universe. When this is a non-stick, it no longer has the identity that we're used to. It becomes the universe. And that's what happens when the mind is still. And the experience of this being a non-stick is what we call insight, or kensho, or enlightenment. Because realizing this is a non-stick, I realize this stick is me. Right? And to the logical mind, that sounds crazy. The stick's not you. What are you, nuts? You're a person. This is a stick. But when the mind is still, we experience the other side of reality, where this is the universe. So to conclude, we just live in a reality created by our thoughts. And it's for the most part a dualistic reality. And this focusing on just this as a stick causes us to be out of balance because we've lost touch with, from the time we were a neonate, we've lost touch with the fact that this stick, this person, the car in the parking lot, it's all the universe. It's all one. It's all part of us. So, as it was said in that poem that I read, Peter Levitt's poem, we all need the soft blade of breath to help us re-experience oneness and intimacy that we knew before we became separated from the source. And that soft blade is the practice of Zazen. And it's this practice that we do that opens the door back to the source. The source where we experience this as non-stick. But this is the universe. And then even those words drop away, right? Because this is the universe creates separation. But when the mind is still, here it is. The mind is still. When the mind is still, we don't really hold to stick or non-stick. So it becomes just a dance. Our lives become a dance between form and emptiness. And they're inseparable from each other. Unless we make them so. So I'm going to end with a poem by Robert Francis. And the poem's entitled Museum Vase. It contains nothing. We ask it to contain nothing. Having transcended use, it is endlessly content to be. Still it broods on old burdens, wheat, oil, and wine. Thank you.